Welcome back to the PLL Happy Hour Podcast, Championship Edition. Or if we got a special one for you, we got a loaded guest lineup. We got PLL CEO Mike Rabel later on in the podcast. We got PLL social guru Emma Adams later on as well. But we start off with the headliner, the guy that we've been trying to get for weeks. It's Chaos Defenseman Jack Rowlett. Jack, what's going on?
Oh, all right. I'm not sure I'm the headliner of that group. That's quite a crew, but I'm not glad to join.
Hey, I thought I'd might put the pressure on, you know, just make yourself the headliner, put some pressure on you, could get rid of this 2.8% thing and put it on your shoulders.
I haven't said the 2.8% thing. After I shredded for the 3.2 last year, that I've stayed out of my mouth. I haven't said it yet. I think that's Dane Smith's thing, though.
Yeah, Dane's big on bringing that back up. But how could you not when you win it all, right? It's a couple Bud Lights down, and I got a lovely little Bud Light here for the PLL Happy Hour podcast. Jack, what are you drinking?
Got a Miller Lite here. Just cracked it. Very excited.
So we got a fun weekend coming up in Philly here. Jack, just what's the mindset going into your second consecutive title game?
Just excited, right? Not necessarily where we were projected to be, but I think this team all had a feeling that we were getting better throughout the season. I think you could see it in our play, maybe not the results later on in the year. We were playing better. We just weren't getting wins necessarily. So, you know, I think that it's, you know, a spot that our team, you know, likes to be in. Obviously, everybody loves playing for championships. We're all excited to be here. And, just looking forward to the one in front of us right now.
Yeah, you guys are thriving in win-or-go-home situations, right? It's the fire from you got from Towers in the locker room, from Dane and Josh's play on the other end, having playoff plays play at his best. But no one, I think, is flying around quite like you are. With when it's time to block a shot, you are diving. When the ball is in Blaze's shorts, you are covering up the camera. Jack, just what gets you so jacked up for these games?
Now, you know, I think Blaze did a good line a couple of years ago in the bubble that really stuck home to me, right? It's like for the guys that don't play indoor, like you go almost 200 days without seeing your guys, right? You go like 200 something days without being able to compete. And it's a feeling that you don't really have when you're in college or in high school, because you can play summer ball, you can play fall ball, you can have a lot of opportunity to play lacrosse. When you play professionally, you know, you have the set amount of weeks they give you, and that's really it. So, you know, just kind of the thought process kind of ramps up. You know, it's lose and go home kind of, you know, situation that gets put in front of you. You know, it brings back, you know, you will be able to see that group. It makes it all the more special. And, you just play a little bit harder. I will say I did not know the camera was in the corner. That was just where I ended up diving. That was
Have you seen the replay, though, now that it looks like it definitely looks like you're covering something up?
Oh, it does. But now that I do know where the camera is, I might be getting some trouble with that. I can definitely hide and, you know. And give Matty Palin a tough time reviewing the goal there.
Right. No, can't make the ref's job easier.
That's my job, right? Is to make Matty Palin's day harder. I think he will tell you that as well.
Speaking of Matty Palin, are you going to cop a jersey?
I asked him. I asked him if he had my jersey. And he said, no, it wouldn't be fair if he had one player's jersey. So I guess it's the same. It wouldn't be fair to like Pete Buchanan, who's a ref, right?
Yeah, that's fair.
If I wore, you know, Matty P's jersey, but
maybe a jersey swap after on Sunday.
If he ever wanted to do that, I would be down to do a jersey swap with honestly any of the officials, Abbott, you know, Dave Pincero, whatever, you know, any of them. If they want to do a jersey swap, I'm always in.
But in all seriousness, you're coming off just an unreal game against the Archers, Grant. For how banged up he's been, you shut him down in the quarterfinals in Gillette. You were definitely looked like in Nick Thurn's head a little bit. Just talk about the playoff atmosphere. How you personally as a defenseman get ready for anything offense throws at you, and more specifically, some trash talk that might come out in the midst of the game.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think earlier in the year, offenses have the advantage on defenses. We don't know what they're going to run. We have to kind of react to what their new sets are that they've installed. But by the end of the year, you kind of have a feeling of what teams like to do defensively. And even more importantly, you have a feeling of what players individually like to do, right? Like, you know, being able to get some of the matchups, you know, with those two attackmen on the chrome, you know, they're both rookies. I played against Wisnowskis a little bit when he was in Maryland, but I'd never seen, you know, Nick Turner play. So, you know, I don't think I had my best outing the first time me and him matched up. So it was definitely something that aided me a little bit and something I wanted to make sure, you know, get back out there and, you know, play my best to see what that looked like matched up with him. So no, again, glad to be in that position where, you know, your team trusts you to go out and play one-on-one. You know, Coach Towers is good with all of his pulls, you know, like that's the style that we want to play. So no, definitely for sure. And honestly, me and Grant don't trash talk at all when it comes to us. We've gone down that road before, and it's not great between either of us. So we have no respect for each other.
Not great as in the outcome isn't great, or not great as in the trash talk itself?
Not great. It's just as like we just both feel bad. It's like we know each other. Like I have to go say hi to his mom after the game. Like I talk to his parents. He knows my parents. It's like, it's one of those things where it's almost like you just yell like at a brother or a sibling, or like maybe a cousin would be a better example. And you have to like then deal like with parents or something in the car ride home. But
that surprises me because you got more fuel for the fire. You know, you got all the personal baggage. You just hop on with the performers on the field.
Kind of my thing, right? So when we do decide to trash talk, we both have all the dirt on each other. We both know
you got the ammo.
Yeah, we know what buttons to poke to set the other one off. So it's kind of like mutually assured destruction, right? When neither one of us want to destroy the other one, have everything blow up. So nice and neutral, nice and casual.
Now, coming up against, so the Water Dogs lost their last two games of the regular season and then caught fire in Boston somehow. They blew out the Alice, snuck out a crazy win against the Whips to prevent their first or their earliest exit in postseason for PLL era wise, but just what's going to be the keys defensively going up against such a really versatile group for the Water Dogs, and for you personally, what's the trash talk going to be like for that?
Now, honestly, it's tough to trash talk a team you've never beaten. Like historically in the league's existence, we've never beaten the Water Dogs.
That's a crazy stat.
They beat us every time in the bubble. Courier, I think it was Zach, hit a game winner. Bubble. This year, they beat us 18-9. I think everybody on the roster, including all three coaches, scored a goal in that game against us. So, you know, they blew us out. And then, you know, I don't remember what the score was, last season, but, you know, we lost to them. So, you know, it's tough because I will say it seems like they've had our number a little bit. It seems like that, you know, they've been able to get the better of us. So, you know, going to go in with definitely maximum respect to those guys. But, you know, that's something Coach Towers has wanted us to do all year. And I think we finally turned that corner. He's playing with a little bit of hatred. And not in a bad way, not in a point where you're getting penalties or it's going over the line, but just playing with enough hatred where, you know, you're going to, you know, be so focused on, you know, winning that one-on-one matchup. You're playing with hatred in that moment. Or, you know, it's a ground ball and all you can focus on is, you know, that ball because, you know, you're playing with such intensity. You know, I think we have success as a team when we do that. And I know myself personally, the more jacked up and juiced I can be, the better I play. If I'm calm and, you know, passive and relaxed, that's not really my game. So for sure, trying to get pumped up will be the focus come game day.
I think you don't have too many problems doing that, right? It's you're a pretty pumped up guy.
Yeah, for sure. I get the juice flowing pretty easily.
To give some context around that 18-9 win that or loss from your perspective that all three coaches from the Water Dog sideline scored, that put your Chaos at 0-4, I believe, at Homewood, and it was the first game you got Dane, Josh, the Bandits core back into the Chaos lineup. Water Dogs went a different route. They didn't start Dylan Ward. He'll be in net starting this week, but that was their first win as a team this season. Just as two teams who've been pretty affected from the NLL overlap to get to this point from 0-3, 0-4 starts this season to making the title. Just, it's cool to hear you talk about the defensive perspective of, all right, now we can kind of figure out what the offense is like to do, what individuals after a season covering these guys will do to improve a defensive strategy and whatnot. But just some of the performances in the clutch from your teammates, whether it's Dane, Josh, Blaze, just how awesome is that as a teammate just to be part of?
Yeah, I mean, you're playing. I was starting to compliment Blaze, and then in the middle of that thought process, I was going to say something about Josh. So I sorry, I confused myself. But now, you know, I'll start on the defensive side of the ball with Blaze, right? I don't think I've played with a guy that exudes that much swagger just naturally on the field, right? Like, he's so confident in what he's doing, and it makes the defense relax. You know, there was a situation this weekend, you know, a goal went in, and the defense was, we were pissed. We were like, what are we doing? Like, that's not, like, got to be tighter than that. Like, all this. And Blaze is like, fellas, not a big deal. The ball's really small. Goal's really big. I might miss a couple. And it's like, just for him to, you know, say that in such a big moment, it's like, he's cool. He's relaxed. He's calm. It's like, he helps us settle down. And then, you know, on the other end of the field, being able to watch Josh and Dane play, it's like, it truly feels like a gift. I think Josh might be the best. You know, the best player in the world when it comes to the offensive side of the ball. I think he's definitely the hardest one-on-one cover out of anybody that's out there. You know, his ability to make all of his moves look the same, his explosiveness, his ability to be creative, and then, you know, Dane has that innate sense, it seems, to find him every single time he's open and put the ball right on his stick. I mean, I know they do it to me in practice. I'll have Josh what I think is covered, and then the next thing I know, the ball is in his stick, out of his stick, and it's a goal. Pass came from Dane. So, no, all those guys are real special to play with and watch for sure.
Yeah, no, it's one thing to have them covered, but the stop it is definitely another. It's definitely fun to watch them play. And, you know, just playing with this group, just, you know, Mark Lucini is a guy that's had the shot blocking reputation since really the inception of Chaos. I feel like, with all your layouts, you think you've kind of overtaken him / you're more of a, like, a wild shot blocker?
I don't know. Glick got one this weekend square in the middle of the back. I think the difference is...
It's a different technique, right? He just goes to the post and then just gets Glick's crushed. And you're just, like, there, just flying 5 feet in the air.
Glick's able to block a shot and then keep playing. For whatever reason, when I eat a shot, I seem to have the trainer come on the field and make sure I'm okay. So I got to work on that for sure. I'll tell you what, this one this weekend didn't feel great.
It was back of the neck, right?
A little bit lower. It was definitely, I got to work on not turning and just taking that thing straight and being a little bit tougher. But I think Glick has the crown there. Again, with his ability to just have that line of the ball, take, block the shot, and then sometimes pick up the ground ball, be able to go with it. You know, he's definitely someone that looks to do that constantly.
You mentioned just the locker room, being able to just rally around Towers. And, you know, he said it all season that the pressure isn't on you guys. As defending champs, that might be kind of counterintuitive, but from the 0-4 start on, it's really been just about kind of finding yourselves turning this thing around, and the impetus is on the other team to beat you guys. Just how much do you relish in the fact that you are this, like, annoying group of no one can figure out how to beat, / just how much do you take comfort in, like, his locker room speeches of, hey guys, the pressure's on them, throw the first punch and we'll be good?
Yeah, I love locker room speeches from Towers, all of them. Like, the pump of is the more X's and O's ones. Like, I do enjoy all of that. But, you know, I think the message has just been consistent, and it's like, get better. You know, I think I said that a little bit earlier, but, you know, it's not like we're not trying hard in the games early in the season. It's like, I think sometimes there's a misconception of, oh, these guys just turn it on for the playoffs. Like, we're trying as hard as we can every single game, I promise.
Wait, Jack, is it bad for the league if Chaos doesn't take the regular season seriously?
Yeah, it's like, I see that. It's like, no, guys, like the coaches aren't happy that we lose. We yell at each other when we lose. Like you know, I think it was a game in Denver, but, you know, Blaze yelled. He's like, you know, we only have, you know, 96 minutes, I think it is, two games left together. You know, I believe that was the situation. You know, he kind of lit into us a little bit, and gratefully so. You know, we weren't playing well at the time. So, no, for all the people that are like, yeah, online, that are like, you know, chaos, don't try, or it's not good. It's like, everybody, we're trying as hard as we can every game. I promise. I'm not sure what turns around right now. I do think it's the fact that we can be more relaxed and have, you know, no real stress again. Like, no one really thought we should be in this position. You know, we almost didn't even make the playoffs last week. The Cannons were like a buzzer beater possibly away from, you know, putting the pressure on us to win. So, yeah, you know, I don't think there's any secret sauce there. Again, I think it's just getting better every day, and that's kind of what Coach Harris reiterates in the locker room.
But how much does having done it last year help your confidence in turn to do it again this year?
So I think it can go two ways. I think it can help because it relaxes you a little bit because you know it's not impossible, and you do have experiences in tough games. I think it can also hurt because it can almost be used as a crutch of like, oh, we've done this before, we'll be all right. And like, you can't have that mindset. You can't set on, you can't expect anything to come. That's when you really, you know, take your foot off the gas, and that's when you end up struggling a little bit more, I think. So, you know, hopefully we can take from that the positives of, you know, we know how to play in big games. We know what it's like to be down in big games. I mean, we probably had the worst single quarter of any team ever in the PLL. We gave up 9 and had scored 0 against the Whipsnakes in the bubble. It's like, so I know we've already had the worst thing possible happen to us. That can't happen again, you know. And even if it does, we've experienced that. We've had the best thing happen. We've won that final. So hopefully we'll be able to manage any range of emotions that could come.
I think you helped rival it with that Chrome first half, but in the quarterfinals with your job defensively. But you mentioned just how difficult practices are guarding Josh, just from that. And I think you said on the post game pod, just from your time as a volunteer assistant down at Georgetown, how much better that's gotten your game. Where do you think, like, how would you, do you say you, would you say you're in the prime of your career here? And like, how much has those experiences helped you get to this elite level, as I would say, as an onlooker, as for close defenseman in the league?
Yeah, I don't really think I'm in my prime. I go back and watch games. I'm like, oh my God, I had so many mistakes, whether they were mental, whether it was physical, I missed ground ball. Like, you know, I see a lot of room for improvement. And being at Georgetown, being coaching is, you know, tremendous help. You know, it's, I think all the pro guys will say this, when they want to be coached more. Like, you know, they want to take their game to a higher level that maybe they don't even know really exists, or they don't even know really what direction it goes. You know, I think, again, being at Georgetown, having Coach Warren, who's a tremendous defensive mind, be able to, like, look at my footwork when I do, like, you know, 3 one-on-ones after practice. And he's like, your feet are too tight. You're backing up too much. Your weight's on your heels. You're not reaching with your hands. And it's just like little things like that where I can, like, you know, yeah, I'm a little bit rusty. I haven't played for sure. That was a mistake. I haven't, you know, that wasn't very good. Just to be able to continuously play and to be coached, I think, allows you to, you know, work on your game year round. You're not just stuck to kind of the summer months. But no, you know, I hope I got more in me. I think I got more in me. I, you know, there are areas of my game that I don't like right now that I think I can really grow on. And, you know, parts of my game that I think I maybe used to have that I've lost, things like that.
What parts do you want to improve?
I think in high school and college, I was, you know, very good off the ground, moving the ball in transition. You know, I was able to score a bunch of goals a year in college. You know, I think that's something that has, you know, just not been the center of my focus. I put a lot of emphasis and effort on one-on-one defense and, you know, team defense and being in the right spot defensively and, you know, that film study stuff that comes with coaching. So, you know, just the ability to continue to affect the game off the ground, being able to do some of those things, you know, like a guy I love to watch growing up is Brody Merrill, right? So everything he does, I think he's a complete defenseman. He can pick up ground balls, so he can take the ball away from you. You can cover wherever you want him to cover. You know, being able to kind of get to that level where Brody was at, where Brody still is at, and then, you know, move on from there is, you know, that's always the goal, strive for the best.
Hey, nothing like the goat of polls to admire, right? But the I bet you saw Jared score all those goals in the first year and you're like, I can hang back here.
Yeah, no, it definitely was a little bit like, you know, your first year in the league, you don't want to mess up maybe more than you want to make good plays. So definitely stay around the defensive end. The year in the bubble, it seemed like everybody was super aware of our team running in transition. So that was kind of, you know, minimized a little bit. And then, you know, 2 years out of it, you haven't really had that live game opportunity to read guys, make moves, dive, shoot, score, pass, whatever the case may be. So it was nice to get my first, you know, pro goal this year. That was definitely a box checked off that I've been waiting for a minute. So that was
did you get the game ball?
I did get the game ball. Jerry Raggedy's actually grabbed it for me. He gave it to me like later. He was like, "Yeah, by the way, this has been in my bag for like a month. Do you want this?" I'm like, "Yeah, appreciate it, man." So it was very cool.
It was cool. The Jerry Raganese diving twister, the pivotal point of chaos this season.
You know, I think Jerry's a guy that truly emulates what Coach Towers wants, right? Like, that's a guy that's going to go out and play as hard as he can. I mean, literally until his body broke down in the game, like, he plays his ass off. You know, he plays with that, you know, intensity, that focus, that toughness that, you know, Coach Towers wants. The blue collar areas of the field, that's kind of a line Coach Towers uses a lot. Dominate the blue collar areas of the field, the ground balls, you know, winning your one-on-one matchups. And I think Jerry's the guy that emulates all of that and more. And, you know, his ability just then to, you know, on his own come to practice the last couple weeks, help work with ads a little bit, give him reps in practice, and kind of be there for him on the sideline. I also think it's kind of something that might go unnoticed, but definitely has an impact on our team.
Now, we got a lot of college fans for the Inside Lacrosse fan base here, but just coming off a season for a rough end for your Hoyas to bow out in the first round, upset by the Blue Hens. But have you guys started fall ball yet?
Yeah, we had our second day of practice today, really.
Have you done any one-on-ones with Tucker yet?
I have not done one-on-ones with Tucker, actually. The grad school guys have some different class hours for, like, they're, like, on a slightly different, like, their semester starting out a little bit weird. So some of those grad guys will join us, like, next week, I think it is. I actually was able to grab Brian Minicus, who also is a grad student, just, like, you know, I grabbed him a little later in the evening and did some one-on-one to him. He's transferred from Colgate. I think he's someone that will surprise people this year.
Yeah, also, he'll turn some heads now that.
Yeah.
He's one of the bigger program.
He's one of the fastest players I've ever guarded at any level.
Wow.
Yeah, no, he like real deal speed. So I'm looking forward to watching that this year.
Well, you got Minicus, you got Tucker Dordovic as the marquee transfers. Couple big gets from your alma mater down in Chapel Hill with Nikki Solomon and Jacob Kelly, right? And just what's the outlook for this Hoyas group as a whole in 2023? And just how excited are you to continue being on the staff?
I love being at Georgetown. I love working for Coach Warren, right? You know, and Coach Warren's message this year was, it was very similar, and it was a story about the, I think it was the Tampa Bay Lightning from 18-19 from the NHL. You know, they were the number one seed, lost first round playoffs to the 8th seed, got swept, came back next year, and, you know, battled through the playoffs and were able to win a championship. You know, wasn't the exact same situation, but, you know, we definitely were a team that, you know, had a lot of hype around us going in, and we weren't able to meet expectations last year. So, you know, the goal this year is to focus on every single day, make sure we have a focus in that, and then, you know, hopefully build those days on top of each other. You know, we're not looking too far into the future, you know, anything really past what we got today and this week.
Just defensively wise, you got, I think it's the last year with Will Bowen. What's it like having him on defense, and just how much, I mean, you're both rocking the 99s and both got great cover skills. Just how much can you take from his game as even a coach?
I can take a lot. I mean, like, you know, it's been a, you know, my relationship with Will is amazing, to be completely honest with you, right? So, like, I was with him at UNC for 1 year. He was a freshman. I was a senior. But we only actually played together for 2 days. I got meniscus surgery in the fall, you know. Was out the entire fall, didn't play one day, came back in the spring, We practiced, I think it was legitimately 2 days together, and then he tore his knee. So, you know, we hadn't really had a chance to ever play together, but...
Yeah,
know.
People forget how, like, young you are with, like... I was doing, like, cut-ups of the U19 team from the 2016. I was like, Jack Rowell, that no way.
But, I got hired at Georgetown at 3. Mm-hmm. So, definitely a little young. Like, it's kind of like Zach Geddes, who's on the Chaos right now. You know, we're only a year apart, and I coached him for 2 years. So I don't really know how that works, but it's not, you know.
Not everyone's got your brains.
Well,
that would be it, right?
But that is. I think it's more of just like my proximity to Georgetown University and their need for a coach at the time, and my relentless text messages to Coach Warren that he at some point. But
hey, no. Got to be relentless in everything, right?
Exactly. Full speed all the time.
But as we wrap up here, Jack, just to tie it back to Philadelphia here, just coming up against a Water Dogs crew. They're going to be hungry. They're going to be ready for you guys. Just how excited are you for the challenge to potentially win 2 straight?
Extremely excited about it. I mean, you know, I haven't really even thought about the fact it was 2 straight. I feel like there were so many losses in between. It's hard to feel like you're really like defending champs. You're really protecting anything.
You got more playoff wins than regular season wins the last 3 years.
Correct. No, yeah. That's not the stat you're looking for all the time, but you know, it's the one we got. It's, you know, for sure a situation where we feel like we're just trying to chase everybody. And, you know, we're just trying to be, you know, that pesky team that you just can't really get rid of. So, you know, we have a ton of respect to the Water Dogs. I was able to play with Michael Sowers on that U19 World Team, like talked about. So I got a tremendous relationship with him. You know, and again, as a team we've never beaten, I think it's a good opportunity to kind of, you know, have that full, you know, re-rate the ship, kind of, you know, turn the season around the way we've been talking about, and hopefully kind of, you know, finalize in a sense.
Totally. Well, Jack, best of luck going into Subaru Park up with the Philadelphia Union Stadium up there. And thanks so much again for joining the Inside Across Happy Hour podcast.
I appreciate you. Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. That was a great guest there from Jack Rowlett. Jack, thanks for your time. And we now welcome on PLL CEO and co-founder Michael Rabel. Mike, what's going on?
What's up, man? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on and valued guest here on the Inside Across Happy Hour podcast, leading into the fourth PLL championship to be crowned at Subaru Park in the Philadelphia Union home stadium. Site of the 2019 title game, so it's going to be a different feel without Rambo and the Whip Snakes there for the first time in title game history, but Mike, we talked earlier in the season, as I frequently plug this Q&A that we did from after week one, it was just your thoughts leading into season four as the PLL ramps up. You know, we're recording this the night of the ESPN premiere of Fate of a Sport, which is the inception of the league and everything that went into that. After seeing all that and kind of going into Sunday here, just what are the thoughts and excitement level going into crowning another champion?
Yeah, man. Well, I always appreciate you doing this, Kevin. I think lacrosse media needs more Kevin Browns out there pounding the table. appreciate your energy. Appreciate you guys coming to this weekend. And, you know, one of the things I have seen that I've liked is you got, you know, podcasts that are popping up outside of just you guys. You guys have been doing this for a while. And the more coverage we can get on the PLL, and the teams, and this great matchup between the Water Dogs and the Chaos, the better. So really appreciate you, man. And all the other ones out there that are traveling on the road with us. You know, this season's been great. We, you know, the relationship with ESPN has outpaced our expectations. From the promotion they've given us to how they've gotten behind Fate of a Sport to and actually ESPN Films acquiring the film, which it's been the number one most watched from a unique perspective film on E+. And we launched it the second to last week of August. So that's really exciting. And then to be part of their network television with ABC, both our semifinal, one of the semifinals games, and then the championship game here. It's been an incredible season. I think some of the things we've also seen is a lot of rookie players been able to make a fast impact this year, which is great, which means that we're continuing to bring in amazing young talent that's going to forge this league and their teams for many years to come. You had record attendance this year. We've had new sponsors this year. So it's just been a whirlwind, man. I remember when I spoke to you the first week, and then now sort of we're fast forward to Philadelphia. You kind of just, it's kind of like a blur at the same time. It's one of those things that is really enjoyable and makes this job really fun. So the pace of it, the fact that we're getting to operate, the fact we're getting able to grow this incredible sport and bring new people into the sport, we just feel very fortunate to be in this position.
Now, before we get into any more of the culmination of the fourth season, as you know, the guy who's been probably the most invested in the development and growth of the league, along with Paul, and just as the co-founder, but coming up on a month on a newborn baby in the Mike Rabel household, midfielder Leo, as you put the tweet out, congrats again, Mike. And just how's fatherhood been for the coming up on a month here?
Yeah, man. Thanks. It's, you know, I don't really have to do that much because my wife is an incredible mom and she is, she's all over it right now. I think my job will kick in when and hopefully our son starts crawling around. You know, I'll have to start sort of helping out a bit, although I do know I've been on the road for the last, you know, 7 days and I won't get home for another four, so I do know that they're trying to work in a bottle so I can relieve my wife right now. So things are good, knock on wood, he's healthy, that's all you can really hope for, and we just wanted to be happy. So appreciate you asking, man.
Certainly some D1 offers coming down the line for Leo Rabel.
It's got he's grown at a pace of an inch a week. So he is a big boy. So we'll see what happens though.
Hey, you got the good genes for it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all in the genes, but coming up in the, on Sunday here at Subaru Park, as the man who does brandish the trophy to the championship winner, talk a little bit about the sponsorship that formed with Cash App, not only as the title sponsor for the league trophy, but just the league playoffs and everything that goes on with that. Just how cool is it to been to work in such a cool relationship with them, and just talk a little bit about the new trophy itself.
Yeah, man. Appreciate that. So, you know, the Cash App championship trophy is something that we're really excited about. We're also even more excited about the relationship with Cash App for a couple of reasons. One, you know, anything that Jack Dorsey usually touches is usually a great product that brings a lot of innovation and change to the world. And so just feel, you know, I spent 7 years out in Silicon Valley in fintech working in that space. And so I always admired what he was doing as he built Square, which is the parent company of Cash App. And, you know, for us, to be honest with you, man, we like to look at brands and work with brands that are authentic to our audience, right? Like I use Cash App. I was using Cash App before we went and partnered with Cash App. You know, some people don't even use the competitor, which we won't name, but starts with the V. And so having Cash App available from a utility perspective to transfer money is great. The fast deposits they make is an incredible feature. But the other piece too is just being able to buy crypto in an easy walleted way. And they make that very simple with Bitcoin. So for me, it was something I was already using. The UI UX is very simple. We know our audience, they skew younger. We knew this is something that's going to resonate with them, a very approachable product, and something that, they're excited about and we think will resonate with their audience, you know, into the day, that's really important. So we were users. It's a clean, great product that has a lot of utility. And we know it resonates with PLL, fans. So it's been a great partnership and they've really got behind it in a big way.
Yeah, no, Cash App definitely great at marketing themselves to the younger crew. I remember them coming down to my college campus and giving out all sorts of free money. So whenever you get free money, you're going to get on the Cash App board, right? Or the wagon, so to speak.
Totally.
So, And again, if there's any PLL employees or players that get paid fully in Bitcoin, let me know. I'd love to do a story about you. That's super cool stuff and very innovative and future forward looking. But sure. Mike, we're going to crown a champion on Sunday for the PLL fourth championship. Chaos looking for their second straight and coming up against the fifth seeded Water Dogs. Just how cool has it been to see the two underdogs of the semifinals make this title game?
Yeah, man, it's been great. You know, look, it's a little bit, it's a bit of a change not having the Whipsnakes in the championship game,
right?
The past 3 years, even in the bubble in 2020, they were there. And so, you know, while I was texting with Rambo and Michael Earhart and some of the other guys like and Coach Staggs, you know, and feeling their pain, I think we're also excited for an incredible matchup. Two high velocity offenses, two tenacious defenses, and Chaos has a chip on their shoulder because of how they started the season and squeezing themselves into the playoffs barely and then getting in and then getting hot at the right time and playing big in big games. And the cool thing about the Water Dogs too is just they're really well coached, they're really well balanced. They've been positioning themselves for this since 2020, their first year. And you know, one of the things I was thinking about on the train is their defense doesn't get enough credit. The games that they've won, how they played on star players, they got, as their fans say, they got some dogs back there. And that defense back there between Eli and Ben Randall and some of the other guys back there that dropped down low, Savia and some of those guys, they're just really, really talented. And so I'm excited to hopefully give some love to the deserving team. We know it's going to be a great game and we're excited to tune in at 3 o'clock on Sunday to ABC.
Yeah, they definitely got that dog in them. We'll see if the dog in them will pay off in a PLL championship here. But Mike, as the guy who hands that trophy off to the winning coach, we saw that when Towers is coming up to pick that up from you last summer, are you just like, wow, I got to nail this handshake. This is a guy with a lot of power, intensity. Give the trophy off pretty well here. What's the mindset of up on the podium there?
You know, it's one of those things where, you know, you just want to be able to sort of tee up a great moment for those guys, right? They work so hard all year round to be in a position to win a championship, and it means a lot to them personally. It's a great opportunity for them to win something that matters and is etched in history and professional across history forever. One of the great things about this trophy this year is that we're honoring all the MLL teams that have won in the past. It's etched on the side of the Cash App PLL Championship trophy. So
really
we're excited cool. So, you know, to be etched in history forever is a really important thing for these guys who put their heart and soul into this. And you know, I'm just a small piece of being up there, and it's really not about me. It's just about, you know, thanking our fans, thanking the team and all the players that didn't win the championship, thanking a couple of our sponsors, and then passing the trophy over to, you know, the winning coach and then his team, and then allowing them to celebrate.
Now, lastly, Mike, just thanks again for jumping on. I know you got plenty to do in the lead up here. Just the streak may finally come to an end of broken PLL trophies with this new PLL structure. Just how cool is it to partner with Tiffany and join all the other major sports and kind of having that trophy company set you up with a pretty cool looking trophy and one that fortunately for the winners, you can't drink out of.
Yeah. You can't drink out of it, but I think we got to a place where we want to really be etching the history of Major League Lacrosse and the PLL together, and really, you know, the foundation that was laid by all the people that came before us, whether they were managing and running teams or playing in that league, and then also what we've done the past 3 years, and culminate it with something great and a presenting sponsor like Cash App. It just felt like the right moment to convince Tiffany to partner with us, and you know, it was a couple of years in the making. I think that's one of the things that I've learned in this business is that relationships take a long time. You just don't walk up to a brand and say, hey, partner with us. They have a million different places they can spend. And, you know, Tiffany, you know, has to take the time and the attention to detail and the energy and the engineering to build the type of structure that we wanted. And they did, and they delivered, and we're just really excited for the first team to hoist that up this Sunday.
Yeah. Well, Mike, thanks again for joining the PLL Happy Hour podcast. Looking forward to seeing you up there in Philly. And
awesome, KB. Appreciate you, man. Keep doing the real work, man. It's really important for our sport and the league. So appreciate you, man.
Absolutely. Excuse me, I love my own words here, but.
But happy hour, that's a happy hour duty, all right?
Yeah, exactly. No.
Boy.
Blame Raul for that as we transition to Emma Adams. Let's hear from Emma. Moving on to our next guest, we now welcome on the PLL social guru, Emma Adams. Emma, for listeners that are well aware of the social presence of the league and everything that's gone on there since its inception, they're well aware of you, but for those who are not as in touch with the social media realm, explain your role and kind of how it's evolved since you joined the team back in 2019.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's definitely evolved. Evolved is a good word to describe it. So I've been here since the inception. My first day was actually the first day of training camp at IMG. And I came on as a social coordinator, and basically my job was just to run on some teams. And so I showed up to IMG and I saw my boss and he was like, here you go. You have Redwoods and Chaos. Go, like, run. And so I basically helped build the inception of these team identities and what they looked like. It's been a blast. It's kind of evolved in. I helped launch the Water Dogs, and then I helped shift the Cannons strategy. And now I'm fortunate enough to kind of be on those like main account handles and kind of overseeing this whole social strategy and like what this looks like, and kind of like be really leading the storytelling from our league and like what that looks like for us. And it's just been so fun and I'm having a blast doing it. So.
And there's a lot to get in there, but let's start off with just what's your background with just lacrosse specifically? What was your exposure before the first day of training camp? And
yeah,
you know, listeners might know from if there are crossovers with you and Lisa's podcast, but
right.
Those who are not as well aware.
Yeah. So I'm originally from Texas. So Texas, it was very slim. Lacrosse was very slim. We had a men's and women's program, but it was actually just like our whole county, and they all met at my high school. So it was very slim. I remember because I was in yearbook, I remember seeing it in the yearbook, but like I didn't know a lot. And so I was very fortunate enough after going to Texas Tech, I studied advertising. I knew exactly what I wanted to do. I was fortunate to get a job at Army West Point. And so I went there. And for me, being from Texas, like the big three was football, baseball, basketball. Like it was always the big three. And I go to West Point and I learn, okay, baseball is definitely not as big up here because of we actually have four seasons and there's this thing called snow. And basketball was not as big because there's actually like height requirements for the Army and people can't be so tall. So it was very hard for people to recruit for basketball. So all of that attention that I was giving to basketball and baseball with living in Texas, I immediately shifted to hockey and lacrosse. And so I completely engulfed myself in the communities of like, what are these sports? Like, what are the opportunities that I see in the media world? I mean, I just fell in love with them so quickly. And the opportunities came much quicker for lacrosse. And I ran with it. And so I was at West Point for 2 years. I got really close with Coach A and that whole staff. And when I decided to make the jump, it's actually a funny story. I was really close with the staff because they were actually like the assistant coaches was my neighbor, Justin Ward, who's the like offensive coordinator. He was my neighbor. And so we got really close. And I remember when I was interviewing, I was like, Justin, like, what is this league that I'm working? Like, I need some background. Like I need one help in these interviews first off, but I also want to see, like, I'm really interested in it. And I want to make sure if I do take this leap of faith that I'm doing it in like confidence. And like, I was literally about to move cross country. And so he was like, let me ask my buddy really quick and I'll get back to you. And I was like, okay. And so he goes to Scott Ratliff, and Scott Ratliff sent this like long message to him. I was like, I know that they're investing in this media team, and if she has this opportunity, she needs to take it. And so, I mean, the next day I got the offer and then I accepted it, and it's been, you know, like this now. So
all thanks to Scott.
Thanks to Scott Ratliff. Awesome. Yeah.
But so did you get like some of the early Nick Turn days, or were you pre?
Yeah. So it's funny. I actually got my final interview with Paul. And I remember we had like a bowling league with the like athletic department. And so it was right before like we had bowling night, and I had my interview in the parking lot. And it, that week was the week that Brendan did the like iconic Game of Thrones celly, and like I captured it and like it went viral. It was like this whole thing. And so I remember Paul was like, did you do that? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, that's sick. And so like, it was kind of like this, like, oh my God, like he's actually like, these people are seeing my work. And so, yeah, it was cool.
You can admit it on the pod. We can get some breaking news here. Did you plant that? Did you make sure Brendan got that Arya Stark celebration?
Yeah, I actually like didn't know. So it's funny. I didn't know he was doing it. And I remember I captured it and I immediately posted it. And I remember everyone was so mad at me because it was technically like a spoiler. And so all of the comments on the post were like, you just spoiled it. Like, what are you doing? And I was like, oh my God, I totally did. And I was like, wait, oh my God, I just spoiled Game of Thrones for everyone. I didn't mean to. And so it was like this whole thing of like, oh my God, like, did I do it too soon? Everyone's like, you definitely did it too soon. And so, it was like a,
the episode's out.
Yeah. The episode's out now. I can still watch it now. Yeah.
But, yeah, no, that put you on a good trajectory, cause you've had some, or at least have been a part of a team that's put together some awesome social posts from these last 4 years, including this past week. I don't know if you had to give the go ahead or if you had the original idea for this, but the Michael Sauer sending Matt Dunn into the song was quite a touch. Would you rank that in your social repertoire, in your resume? And what's just been some of your proudest post for PLL?
I mean, that Sours one is really good. And we made it in, we had this like content media Airbnb leading up to championship. And so we made it in, we called it the content house. So we made it in the content house. We all sat in the kitchen and watched Stelios make it. And we were all like, oh my God, like, what is this? Like, what are we creating? It's like, sometimes we do something. It's like, what are we doing? Like, what are we like creating right now? Some of my favorite posts, I mean, there's a lot. One like campaign that I'm really proud of year over year is the Players Top 50. That's something that takes a lot of work and a lot of like steps, and to see how it's evolved in just 2 years of the storytelling around it, and even like media like creating and like having storylines around it, and like everything that it has become in the 3 years that I've done it, it's like I'm really, really proud of that. I'm trying to think of other things. Like there's always like good, I think it's like honestly like the things that I'm most proud of is like nuggets that I find, and it's like, wait, that's like really cool, we should do something. Like the like Kyle Bernlohr note whenever he won in year one, and he like wrote it in his journal, and it's like there's different things that you find and you're like, I can't believe I found that, like, oh my gosh. And so like there's different things. And even like when I was running the Redwoods, like we did a campaign, it was like, why the woods? And like, that was the whole thing of like, even though they lost in 2019 and it was like this insane story, it was actually like a really positive sentiment in that off season. Cause everyone was like, we're doing it, we're going to do it next year and like everything. So that off season was something that I was also really proud of. So there's a lot of like really random ones really.
Yeah, they all come off, like, especially the top 50, I'll just like the graphics come off really sharp. And so we all know you got the expertise there, but judging from your Twitter banner, at least, is it fair to say you're going to be a Water Dogs homer for this championship game coming up?
I am. Which the Chaos are going to hate me.
You're like a Redwoods homer.
Yeah.
First and foremost.
So yeah, I mean, it's so hard because like I have been with the Redwoods literally since day one, and like me and Nat have just like this fantastic relationship, and like with the players, and like then I did Kyle Harrison's retirement, and like there's just so much that I like, and I remember like I took Ryder Garnsey's headshot, and like there's just so many things that I have tied. I can't help but love them. But at the other end, it's like, I remember launching the Water Dogs was one of my first like big opportunities at PLL. And it was kind of like, I remember it was New Year's Day, and I was in the office, and I was just like waiting for this text from Paul that he was texting Big Cat, and like I was texting Copeland, and like it was just this whole thing, and like watching it all come together. I'm hoping for the Dogs. I'm really scared, like just with like seeing last weekend and like you know, Schlosser going down and like Mikey, like it's like scary, but like you just want them to do it. I want them to do it.
Nah, because you got Connor Kelly in the his jersey in the banner piece, yeah. Specific. Just who are some of your favorite players on the Water Dogs? Because like you said, it's been pretty phenomenal just to see their rise from expansion club to being in the title game, just, and who are some of your favorite players throughout?
So Water Dog specifically, I have a soft spot for Zach Currier. We've like had a really great like working relationship. I think like he has really like come into his own, especially in this last year, from like a media perspective and like having that confidence in talking. And so he's definitely a favorite. On that team, I also just love Sours. Like Sours has been another one that we've really worked with him on, like his media presence and what that will look like, not only on his accounts, but from the PLL as well. Like when do we want to tap on him for appearances and to be on camera speaking? What's he comfortable with and things of that nature? So Sours is up there. I always have like a like funny spot for like Chris Sabia. I remember when I was on the Water Dogs, like Chris Sabia's friends used to always get at me. And so I used to always jab it back at them. So like, he's a funny one. I think outside of the Dogs, I mean, there's a lot. I love like Cav, Matt Kavanaugh. I love how he plays. I love, he's just gritty. Like that guy like never gives up on a play. And like whenever he has a moment like that, you're just like, hell yes, like that was sick, like that was awesome. So love that. I'm trying to think of like other guys that I like to push. And so I mean like Trevor is always like great.
Trevor's pretty reliable for social accounts.
Yeah, and like with this year with Trevor, we worked a lot with him on like his social accounts and like what does that look like for him, and like I think that's something that we're really trying to do is like learning, just as I said with like Sours, of like what are they comfortable with and like where do they want to grow, and then like leaning in and like making it a win-win like relationship basically.
Yeah, it's super fascinating because from the outsider perspective, you see the amount of access the league does get into the players' lives and the locker rooms. Just talk about that a little more, how you've kind of fine-tuned that balance and kind of the cultivation of getting these guys to see the benefits of having that social profile, having that advertising from the league.
Right. I think it first and foremost, it's trust. It's so important to have that trust with players and with especially coaches, and knowing that whenever we do have this access, like we'll never put them in a negative light. Like we capture everything, but like not everything is hitting social media. There's a lot that doesn't make it because it's not worth us putting like something that negative and like ruining a lot of work that we have been putting into a person or a team or whatever, a storyline. And so I think that's like something that we've like really been trying to work on is like that trust. And I think another thing is just like I said, like curating like what they're comfortable with, like with Sours, like he specifically wanted to have a sit down with the social team and like really wanted to work on his social presence this season. And so we had a conversation of like, okay, like, what are you comfortable talking about? Like, and it's like a very honest conversation. We were like, sometimes you can give coach speech. So like, we got to get out of the coach speech. Come on. Like we would love to mic you up, but like, if we mic you up, can we kind of get some personality out of you? And so like, it's been this kind of, like that thing. I think, I had the same conversation with like Mac O'Keefe last year in his rookie year of like, I was like, you have such potential. Like, who are some social presence of athletes that you like, whether it's lacrosse or not lacrosse? And you know, it can be anything from like, I think Mac O'Keefe said Tom Schreiber, and he's like, I just think Tom does it right with his social presence. Like he's like minimal words, but like actions speak for himself, but he like shows off the homies, but it's also just like, he's having fun with his life. Right. And I was like, we can do that. Okay, great. So like, just like learning how every guy wants to lean into it, because everyone's going to be different. Trevor is completely different from Mac O'Keefe, who's completely different from Paul, right? So like finding those nuances and finding ways that I can be helpful to them.
Well, listeners, you got to send a lot of praise Emma's way, because getting lacrosse players to do that is no easy task. They're a lot like hockey players with the way they talk after games or just around media in general. When you're talking to them off the record, it's like, wow, I didn't know you had this much personality. And that's what the sport needs more of. And that's I think kudos to you and your team for showcasing that. But as we wrap things up, Emma, let's go into, as I'm sure your social team has been cultivating this whole week, just there's plenty of storylines to go along with this championship game against Chaos, second time making it in a row here, and Water Dogs, their first appearance in the title game. What's your favorite storyline going into Sunday?
Ooh, that's a good question. I think it's just so like I think it's probably Kieran McCardle, just like his story arc, right? Like it's just, I think it goes back to like, I'd love to see the Dogs win. I'd love for Kieran to have a great game and for him to get that MVP. Like, I just think it would just be the perfect wrap of this season for him. Like, I would just love that for him. He deserves it hardcore. And so that's my favorite. I really want him to have a good game. Really, really.
I would certainly... overlooked no more he would be if he gets the three goals, four assists game out of him and the Water Dogs win. You can't really dispute a finals MVP, right? For the
agree
lefty attackman. But Emma, before I let you go, RJ's been documenting the search for a perfect cheesesteak in Philadelphia. Has the social team found it?
So I had the first, I was in on the first round. We went to Pat's, I think it wasn't that great.
Very touristy. Yep.
Yeah. It wasn't that great. And then they went somewhere like the next day and I was like, all right, I can't have a cheesesteak in 2 days. Like, come on. So I was out on it, but apparently it was way better. I don't know what the spot was called. We'd have to, call him up and ask him, but, he said it was pretty good. So I think he may have found it.
Maybe a post-game treat for Sunday.
Yeah,
widen out the gap a little bit instead of consecutive days.
Why not?
Well, Emma, thanks so much for coming on. Really appreciate you and all you do for the sport and for the PLL. Just nice to have finally a female presence on the Happy Hour podcast. So
yeah.
In that respect, it's been great. And anything you want to plug before signing off?